itself.
Susan, Bruce, you, I'm telling you, we got to make the song list. We got to make the song list. The best songs Susan finds for The Attitude with Arnie Arneson and Susan Bruce. And you're sitting here going, so what the heck was that Solar Edge PV? Solar Gangnam style?
Gangnam.
Thank you. I don't know what that means. But anyway, it was fabulous. It was perfection. And it was such perfection that our next guest, if he had not heard that song, which I can't imagine he is not, should absolutely put this on every time when people call him. Instead of like an answering machine, they should be playing that song. And the reason I'm saying this is that our next guest is John Farrell. He directs the Energy Self-Reliance States and Communities Program at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and he focuses on energy policy. And the reason I called John Farrell is I saw an article at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and it confused me a little, all right? Let me just say this. And it was entitled, Is Solar Ownership Poised for a Comeback? And I'm thinking, when did it come back? When did it start, number one? And who the heck can afford this? So with this as my question, and of course with this fabulous song, Solar Edge PV by Solar Edge PV, I want to welcome John Farrell to the program. Have you ever heard that song, John? That's hilarious.
That's a new one to me, but I'm taking that down right now.
Oh, God, honey, you got to play that one all the time. Whenever we link to your site, that should be playing in the background. So, John, we've talked before, and the reason I called wasn't that I was sort of surprised with the idea of solar ownership, but we had done a number of interviews over the course of the last year or two with people that were looking at leasing solar panels. And in fact, we talked to a large operation out of California called, I think it's called Sun Run, and a number of other places where they come into a city, they look at your roof, they evaluate, they say, listen, here's a win-win strategy, you can't afford the upfront costs, we'll put the panels on your roof, we'll sort of share in the benefits. And to me, given the cost of solar panel, not even just the panels themselves, but getting your roof ready, doing all that sort of dog and pony show, the idea that somebody would do it for you makes it one, it seems at least on paper, affordable. It also means that more and more of us might be willing to do it because we tend to be lazy. We like the idea of turnkey, and we like the idea of somebody else doing it. And if the world benefits from the additional solar energy, I'm going to go where the world benefits, maybe not just me. So talk to me about your article, because your article suggests that we may be losing more than gaining with the concept of leasing.
Yeah, it's important for, I always like to give a little background on this, which is that solar leasing is a key market solution to a kind of policy problem. You know, we in this country give our incentives for solar energy. The primary one is this federal 30% tax credit, and
right.
Nobody wants to turn down 30% off. But at the same time, it's kind of complicated to use that. And so it definitely is attractive to folks when you're talking about, you know, number one, a big upfront cost for solar,
mm-hmm.
and number two, trying to figure out how to use this tax credit. When someone comes to your door and says, hey, I can cut your energy bill, and, you know, no money down,
mm-hmm.
You know, of course this is going to be a good model.
Mm-hmm.
But we tend to miss what might be a fairly big opportunity to keep a lot of more of the money from that solar energy system in the pocket of the homeowner and in the community when we use solar leasing.
All right, so you, for example, you have a graph in front of me, rise of third-party ownership, and you're looking at California residential solar installs. So let me sort of get to where the point is. We're used to having a public utility. We're used to turning on a switch. We're used to some, you know, utility making all these energy decisions for us. So, you know, you're fighting history, which is part of our problem. But like you, I would like to see us move into what you call and I call the democratization of energy, where I don't want to be beholden to a country. I don't want to be beholden to a utility. I don't want to have to genuflect to the coal industry or the gas industry or the fracking business. I would like to be able to sort of be the master of my own energy use and my own energy creation. So that's my goal. But I'm quirky, and so are you. And I don't think we've ever taught that value, John. You know that. We haven't taught. It's really funny. Everybody wants to own something, but they've never thought about owning their energy. Isn't that interesting that we've never developed that mindset? So tell me how my ability to own has a better long-term result than leasing when we're seeing a rising gap between rich and poor, no one's seeing their paychecks growing. While the feds give you 30%, you still have a lot of issues with zoning and planning, and a number of states don't even, you know, don't help you in any way, shape, or form. And some states actually charge you higher property taxes because you've enhanced the value of your house by putting on the solar panels, so they're almost creating a disincentive. So tell me how you get to the buy control versus lease argument and why regular people can even imagine it.
Well, I'll address the last part of your question first. Is, you know, we can imagine this now because of a remarkable shift in the technology and the economics of solar energy. You know, 20 years ago, there really wasn't a point in talking about having ownership of your energy because there was no affordable way to do it. And what we've seen now is, you know, even 5 years ago, putting on a rooftop solar array that would account for most of the energy on a typical home in this country probably would have cost $40,000. Now that same system costs about $18,000. The price has fallen by more than half, and it continues to fall very rapidly, by, you know, 7 to 10% per year. So we're seeing a remarkable and growing opportunity simply because the cost is changing with this technology that can be used almost everywhere. We all get at least some sunshine on our property.
Yes.
Now the reason that we're talking about ownership instead of leasing, I mean, the example I give is like a car. You know, cars are complicated. Cars are expensive. And yet about three-quarters of people, when they go out to get a car, buy a car. They might borrow money to buy that car, but they own it. They don't lease it because they recognize that over the term of their ownership, I mean, a car is going to decline in value anyway. It doesn't produce anything. It's much different in that sense than a solar panel. But most people own a car because they understand that ownership is going to mean more money in their pocket in the long run, even when you take into account the fact that you have to borrow money to do that. And the same thing is true with solar. When you simply look at a spreadsheet, kind of analyzing how much you're going to put in up front, what you might have to pay over the course of ownership, and the fact that a solar panel is almost zero maintenance for a very long period of time, ownership makes a lot of sense, and it means a lot more money in people's pockets. And the issue so far has simply been it's kind of a new thing, and people are intimidated by that, and so the idea that someone else is taking care of it is very attractive. And it's also been a very expensive thing, even more so than a car. But ultimately, what we're talking about here is, you know, you buy a solar panel, you're prepaying for your energy for about 25 years, and you're going to be able to do that at a price that's much more attractive in many places than the electricity you're going to be able to get from your utility. And leasing can be a way to do that. But as ownership gets easier and as the cost keeps coming down, I think that's why we're going to see that this the rise in the use of solar leasing and third-party structures for owning solar flip back toward local and individual.
So let me just say something. So I have solar panels on my roof. I have 18 of them. I bought them right as the market was just beginning to go down. So you talked about $40,000. I spent about $30,000. So I know how expensive it was. And now you're telling me it's 18 and 15 and I want to cry. But the benefit is twofold. One is I did figure out the 30%. Okay, so I figured out how to get the credit from the federal government. And the good news was the 30% is on the entire cost of actually putting it on your roof. So, which is fantastic, because if you have to, like, I had a slate roof, I had to have the slate removed, and I had to put the solar panels on, it was like ridiculous. So that was 30% off that total cost, which was fabulous. The other thing was we had something called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative that allowed, you know, folks to be able to access up to $6,000 towards putting in these alternative energy things. I was able to benefit from that. And even though I paid way too much from today's prices versus what I was paying 5 years ago, I'm also getting the value of the solar panels for 5 years. So, you know, I could have waited 5 years, but I hope I helped the environment for 5 years, and I've also had, you know, less energy costs for 5 years. But let me just say something here, John. I think we're still living under the impression that solar panels are expensive, so you really haven't marketed how cheap they've gotten. That story really hasn't come out in a way that more people need to understand it and access it, number one. So we need to sort of sell the cheap story. Number two, I think we need to sit down with lots of zoning boards and planning boards and local communities and get them to help us do this, not be an impediment to doing this. And that's a real problem where you see a lot of communities putting up barriers instead of making it easier, number two. And part of the reason why, unfortunately, I see a lot of zoning and planning boards being sort of an impediment to solar is that you're going to love this. I think I told you this last time we talked, John, but when I put my solar panels on the roof, the spokesperson for the large utility, electric utility in my state, told me I was being selfish. He said that money should have gone to the utility and not to me, that I was being selfish and flaunting my wealth.
By not lining his pockets.
Exactly. It was like unbelievable. I was like, I'm sitting here going, I could not believe the words coming out of his mouth because it was like the exact opposite.
Incredible.
It was incredible. So you've got the utilities, you know, somehow pushing this idea that if you do this, you are harming the community as opposed to benefiting the community. And then last but not least, tell me, John, you do this for a living. I only sort of, I'm like a tea bag. I go in, I go out, I go in, I go out. So tell me why we haven't come up with a battery. And the reason I say that is, you know, my excess capacity goes on the grid. That's fine. But I would rather have my excess capacity go into some kind of a battery. And the reason is that in the middle of the winter, when we, you know, lose electricity because we have 10 feet of snow or all these other things that happen, I would love to know that I am somewhat independent from, you know, the bad weather, but because we don't have that battery backup that's either affordable or reasonable, nobody can do it. How can we send a man to the moon and not figure out an inexpensive, useful battery for solar panels?
You know, that's a great question, and frankly, it's one that so many people are so invested in right now. There's so much money and energy going into the research around batteries, and what I will say is, they're actually getting a lot cheaper. I mean, not in this particular post, but in some of the other research I've done, I've looked at energy storage and battery costs, and what's really driving it, frankly, is your phone,
yeah.
And it's pretty soon it's going to be your car. Is that we've mass produced little batteries for a long time to run our personal electronic devices and toys and all that kind of stuff, but we've mass produced a little bit larger batteries, like car batteries,
mm-hmm.
that are really more, you know, kind of an assistant to the car. Basically, they're just there to start the car, and then it's going to run on fossil fuels. And we're finally getting to the point where we're looking at how do we use these things to really run our devices, whether that's our vehicles or our electronics. And we're just at this right moment in history, is what I would say. Before this, we haven't had kind of the computing technology to manage the use of the battery. We haven't had the demand on such a large scale for the batteries to get that mass production benefit. And it's the same thing you see with solar. The reason that solar is getting so much cheaper is that the hardware is now being mass produced by the millions. And so the more millions and millions of panels we make, the more we learn about how to make them more efficiently and faster and automate that production, and the price continues to fall. And that's the same thing that's going to happen with batteries over the next decade. So, you know, like you said, you're kind of an early adopter on solar in a way compared to what the price is now. The same thing would be true right now if you bought a battery. You probably could find a battery that would work, but it'd be pretty expensive.
Right.
You know, 10 years from now, that won't be the case. But the one thing I would say, though, I think that's kind of important context for this, is the utility is wrong to say that you're causing a problem. In fact, that excess energy you send to the grid is energy your neighbors get to use, is energy
exactly.
that wasn't lost in transmission
exactly.
from a big remote power plant.
Exactly.
It's valuable energy. And that grid is a commons. It's a network that we all share and can benefit from. So in some ways, we wouldn't want you to have to go out and buy a battery. Use the grid as your battery. That's terrific. Now, there may be some issues with reliability with your grid that make you want to buy a battery, and that, frankly, is also a commons problem where we need to go tell the utility, you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
This grid should be more reliable.
Right, right.
But we're coming to a point where I think people are going to have that option more frequently, that they can go off the grid if they want to.
Well, let me just say something. About a year ago, I interviewed a guy who sold the Prius, you know, the electric cars, the cars with the electric batteries or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the things he was marketing was why you should buy this car is that you can use the battery, the electricity that this car produces to run the car, that in case there is a storm and the electricity goes out in your house, he has these cables that you can set up that run from the car into the house, and you can keep your lights on and maybe even a refrigerator working and maybe one computer. But he was saying, see, this is your backup battery, so in case it's a problem with the house. Well, now I'm seeing the whole thing being in like a perfect storm. If I have solar panels on my roof and I have a battery and I have a car that uses electricity, I'm like producing everything on my own. I'm driving my car. I'm making sure my house, you know, stays lit and warm in the winter. I'm using the sun to produce it. I mean, it is seamless that we aren't jumping through hoops to make this happen, because not only does it seem so incredibly affordable, but it gives me such a sense of independence. How come the Tea Party isn't behind you? Where are all those damn libertarians? I mean, this is the most libertarian thing I've ever heard, John. Screw government. Screw the public utility. I'm doing it all on my own. I just can't figure out why it hasn't been embraced not only by a bunch of lefties and liberals and people that believe in global warming, but a bunch of libertarians who really want to move to some remote island. Well, their house could become a remote island if they actually did the right thing, and this is the right thing. It's kind of hilarious, but it's true.
I think I mentioned this the last time we spoke, but there are some libertarians and Tea Party folks in Georgia. They teamed up with the Sierra Club to work on solar power, and they called themselves the Green Tea Coalition.
I love it.
And we haven't taken advantage of that enough yet. But
no.
I think there's definitely a case to be made for folks out there who are on that side of the political spectrum who say, you know, I don't want to be beholden to government. I don't want to be beholden to this big monopoly utility.
Yes.
I want to be able to do this myself.
Yes.
And that's what they did in Georgia, and that's what I think they're going to be doing in a lot of other places, is looking at this and, you know, it's not a climate issue. It's not even a pollution issue necessarily, although some of them have care about that. But it's this self-reliance issue, and
yes.
I think it can be very attractive to a lot of people.
So here's my pitch, all right? You're talking to Arne Arneson in the state of New Hampshire. What is New Hampshire known for? The first in the nation presidential primary. So I have a funny feeling that Rand Paul, our local libertarian, there's going to be a lot of Republicans running for office. Unfortunately, the Democrats have only one person right now. We don't have a bench. We have a stool. But on the Republican side, you do have a bench. And I would recommend that you somehow figure out a way to approach some of these people that are running that are Republicans, because as you pointed out, you don't have to believe in global warming. You may not even like solar power, but you like the idea of independence and self-reliance. And this feeds so much into that value. And if the result turns out to be it's good for climate change, I'm a happy camper. But if they feel like, you know, we've massaged their self-reliance ego, I'm happy with that too. So I just think this is a state that you really need to sell this in, because this is a place where if we can get a presidential candidate to start talking about it, solar can be looked upon in a very different way, and there are many paths to solar, and self-reliance is one of them. And I think that's one that both libertarians, a lot of conservatives, and a lot of Tea Party people could truly appreciate. And I don't want to see Georgia being the only place that it happens, because there are 49 other states that we need to see it happen as well.
Well, you know, New Hampshire is an important one for another reason. I believe your state motto is live free or die. So I think that solar is definitely appealing to that sentiment.
Absolutely, John. Absolutely.
So that we don't live freeze and die.
That's right. Live freeze and die. All right. Last comment before I let you go. And again, we're talking with John Farrell. He's the directs the Energy Self-Reliance States and Community Program at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. So you were talking about ownership versus leasing. Has anyone come up with, like in the state of New Hampshire, we have something called the Community Loan Fund. And people give money to the community loan fund rather than to their bank, and they earn a little bit of interest, 3 or 4%. And the community loan fund then goes in and helps people buy their mobile home parks, or helps people buy and create affordable housing. And it's a loan. It's not a gift. It's a loan. And people have created this community loan fund to stabilize the real estate in our state and to make sure that there is affordable housing and people who are so vulnerable, especially in mobile home parks, don't feel like, you know, that the park can be sold out from under them and then they're sort of left holding the bag. Has there been a creation of community loan funds for solar panels? Because if we could get the price down and get this way of affordability between that and the federal 30%, you might see people really taking advantage of it, because there is a place to go, and it's not just the leasing shop, now it's the loan shop.
You know, there have been some really remarkable examples. I'll give you two of them. One is in Connecticut. They have a publicly financed loan program. It's basically called a green bank. Which is, you know, resources that are put together from the state, and again, loans, not grants, to folks at reasonable interest rates that allow them to purchase their own solar energy system, to do energy efficiency improvements. And there are a number of these green banks in other states as well. You know, what I'm really interested in, frankly, is this group called Mosaic. It used to be called Solar Mosaic out in California. And what they've done is sort of two interesting things. One is that they've said, you know what, let's find a way for individual small, you know, individual people, not rich people, to invest in solar energy, maybe even right in their community. And so they have crowd financing where people can put in, you know, $100, $500, $1,000, earn a reasonable rate of return, like 5%, I mean, way better than your savings account, and invest in an actual concrete solar project in a community in California or New York. And they haven't made it work everywhere yet, but it's a first step. But the second thing they're doing that's really remarkable is that they're also going to start crowd financing loans to individuals to do solar. But they're gonna team up with another company and also offer a maintenance contract. So they're gonna be like the solar leasing folks. They're gonna come and say, you know, no money down, you can put solar on your roof, and we'll take care of the maintenance. And by the way, you're gonna own it. You're gonna be the owner of it. We're just loaning you the money to buy it. And I think that really is going to be
the
start of this significant shift back to ownership. Is when you make ownership as easy then as a solar lease, I don't think there's going to be very many people who would choose against it.
Well, I love you. Thank you for telling me about this, because this is, I have to take people where they live. And I know that their lives are chaos. I know sometimes they're not as curious as they need to be. They want someone to sort of fix it for them. I mean, that's why despots work out so much better than democracies. You know, it's like a despot you don't have to elect, you don't have to worry about, you just may hate them. But this way, if we actually understand how to get people to sort of back into solar and solar ownership by making it easier for them to actually understand the nature of ownership versus leasing and create a bridge to ownership that right now doesn't seem to exist until you just describe to me this Mosaic concept, I think you're absolutely right. I think the time is coming. And the good news is, despite Fox News, despite Rupert Murdoch, despite a lot of conservative radio, people actually are really beginning to understand there is such a thing as climate change, and you better start worrying, and you better start really thinking about how your behavior can make a difference. And this is clearly something that can make a difference. So thank you so much for joining us, John. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Always a pleasure.
It was great. Thank you so much. All right, everyone. The title of his piece is Solar Ownership Poised for a Comeback?
Wait, there's some really
great ideas. Do you love this show?
Information.
This is John Farrell. I've interviewed him a couple of times. I think I drive him nuts. Okay, I know this, because I call him up going,
he could have said no.
No, I know, but he doesn't, because in the end, he teaches me. We learn from each other a lot. And New Hampshire really is a great place. The Green Tea Party. What was it called? The Green Tea?
Yeah, the Green Tea Party.
The Green Tea Party. The Green Tea Party. And the Mosaic idea.
That's brilliant.
We've got to figure out how to do that. Even the Green Bank in Connecticut. You know, I just want from PSNH to listen to this.
This is great creative stuff that we don't hear
enough
about.
And I think New Hampshire is ripe for this kind of thing. Because the Community Loan Fund that Julie Eads created many, many decades ago turns out to be a model for the country on how to help people buy their mobile home parks, how to stabilize affordable housing. Really, it's a national jewel. And we created it here. I remember when it was just beginning. Why can't we do this
same thing and use solar as our raison d'etre. It would be we have a lot of rich people here. We're one of the richest states in the nation. Rich people can put their money in mutual funds. They can put their money in bank accounts in the Swiss Islands or Switzerland or the Cayman Islands. Or they can put their money into these kinds of things. Do okay, but do right. Do okay, but do right. What a win-win.
The newspaper I work for in Conway has solar panels on the roof, the Conway Daily Sun.
Exactly, exactly.
Because it was the right thing to do.
And you know what? John made me feel better about putting my excess capacity into the grid. I am being a battery for my neighbors.
Yeah,
it's a really good way of looking at it, everyone. So I'm going to recommend that you go to his website, which is ilsr.org. Get this? ILSR.org. And the title of the piece that we were talking to John Farrell about today was, Is Solar Ownership Poised for a Comeback? He does incredible analysis. He does the math for you. And I bet you if you talk to solar
readable.
People.
And it's readable.
Yeah, it's
the
great.
Average person can read this and understand it.
And remember, he said the price has dropped dramatically. Dramatically.
Well, I mean, 40,000 to
18. To 18.
That's pretty
18.
Huge.
That's huge. And you still get 30% off from the feds no matter what that happens at the state level. And a number of states are very supportive of this kind of investment, very supportive to what he just described. The state of Connecticut actually has a damn green bank. Why don't we have a green bank? Oh, my God. Anyway, I know why we don't have a green bank. Why am I even asking that question? So just a real quick insight into tomorrow. Do you know who Zephyr Teachout is? I'm going to ask this question. Well,
I do.
You do, but I bet you a lot of folks in my audience don't. Tomorrow you will learn who Zephyr Teachout is. You need to know this name. Repeat, Zephyr Teachout. I'll give you a little hint. She's originally from Vermont, but not anymore. And with that, we say au revoir to the Tuesday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson and Susan Bruce. Thank you, Susan. That music was fabulous. Just to let you know, fabulous. All right, stick around. Aretha Franklin. Just